Welcome back. It's overtime on The Fan. Toby Altizer with you here on the 4th of July. It's time to get out to the BetQL guest hotline and welcome in our guest from The Athletic, Josh Robbins. Hey, Josh, how you doing today?
Doing well. Happy 4th.
Happy 4th to you as well. Let's start with the NBA draft for the Wizards. What'd you make of the Wizards draft?
It's all about upside, particularly Alex Sarr. He has the capability to one day be an all defensive team level player. And now it's up to the Wizards and Sarr and Bub Carrington and Keyshawn George to develop and develop each other. So that's part of what's going to make the next year, 2-3 years really interesting. Just how much better can each of the draftees get?
Yeah, let's get into them individually. Like, Alex Sarr was someone that I think maybe has the highest upside of anybody in the draft just because of his profile athletically. Like, what is his ceiling and what should the expectations be in year one?
I think his ceiling is an all-defensive team player. Someone who is maybe one day similar to Jaren Jackson. Maybe one day possibly a rim protector like Rudy Gobert to a degree. The question is his offense. He's got a decent shooting stroke, but he's got to develop a whole lot more skill. Is he a 4? Is he a 5? I don't think the Wizards know yet. I don't think Alex Sarr knows yet. He's 7 feet tall. He's 225 pounds. He's got to add a lot of weight to become an effective center and to become an effective 4. He's got to add a lot more skill. So in year one, I expect him to play pretty heavy minutes, maybe not immediately, but ultimately play heavy minutes. And this is a case where, as with both of the other rookies, they can make mistakes and learn from them. They've got that leeway. They've got that leeway.
Well, and I was reading your piece about some of the draft picks, talking with Josh Robbins from The Athletic and talking about some of that positional size, with obviously Sarr being a long wing and maybe even a center inside the paint. You look at Carrington and George, they got long wingspans as well, and, you know, combo guards to wings. Is that something that we can expect going forward with Will Dawkins and Michael Winger in charge, where they're going to look for guys that have that some of that defensive versatility, that length on the outside?
100%. Absolutely. And we already saw it last year with Bilal Coulibaly and Tristan Vucevic. Really, Bilal, in the sense that was 6'8 when he's drafted. He's probably 6'9 now. And he's viewed as a swingman, really as a 3-2 who could double in at times at the 4 when he gets stronger. So that is going to be the commonality of these Will Dawkins drafts, where they're going to go emphasize positional size. Ultimately, there may be a case down the road where they don't do that. But if there's going to be, for example, I'm just spitballing here, a 6'2" point guard down the line, well, if that's the case, then that 6'2" point guard is really going to have elite level skills to make up for that lack of size.
Well, we're going to go through the rest of the, you know, Carrington and George, but, you know, that 14th pick was acquired via an Avdija trade. And I'm interested to hear your viewpoint on the Avdija trade, because, you know, I expected maybe there to be some movement, but Avdija was not at the top of the list. And so, you know, first thought for me covering this team and being, you know, Wizards fan is, I'm surprised it's Avdija. I didn't necessarily like it at first, but then you see the reception nationally and from people not covering the team, and they thought it was good value for the Wizards. I'm curious what your thoughts are on that trade.
I would say it was great value. Does that mean it was the right move? Not necessarily. He's a 23-year-old, tall, positional size, athletic player who was showing some pretty significant growth on the offensive end, and he loved to play defense. And he's a good guy, and he's liked in the locker room, and he's the Wizards guy. They drafted him. They started to develop him. What it told me was is that aside from Bilal Coulibaly and some of their future draft picks, and I'm just talking about the draft picks themselves without a player attached to them, that Denny Avdija had the second most value, trade value of anyone on the roster, even more than Kuzma at this stage. That's what that told me. And I, around the league, I think people were surprised that he drew that return. Two picks, two first round picks, two second round picks, and Malcolm Brogdon, who's almost ancillary to the whole thing, but he's actually probably going to start the season on the roster.
Well, and I saw that second first round pick is in, what, is 2029? And I saw someone kind of point that out, that you're looking at a time frame when some of those contracts would have been running out. You know, I think that's a little bit far out, but is that maybe like a realistic timeline when we're looking at the Wizards kind of going for it in that sort of range, where, you know, Sarr would have had a couple of years in the league and Koulibaly would have had plenty of time, and this core that they're looking to assemble would have been able to gel a little bit? Is that maybe the timeline? I know they're not maybe labeling it the process like Philadelphia did, but it's in a lot of ways similar.
Well, it's not quite that bad in terms of a total teardown, but they are playing for 5 or 6 years down the line, where really the people who are going to be the core of that team, of whatever the Wizards are going to be, ideally, it's people who either just finished high school or the equivalent, in this case, Sarr, or people who are going to be a senior in high school this upcoming school year. Those are going to be the highest level players on that roster in 2029, most likely. People who just finished high school or will finish high school in 24, 25. Because that's part of the problem of waiting 2 years to trade Bradley Beal and start a rebuild. The first full year of the rebuild, the first draft, not such a great draft. Next year's draft and the 2026 draft, high level at the very top. So you play the game or the cards that you've been dealt, and those are the cards that this front office has been dealt.
So let's take a look at Bob Carrington talking with Josh Robbins from The Athletic. Pretty cool part of seeing that Will Dawkins basically had a conversation with him before he was drafted, asking him, you know, he's from Baltimore, so from the area, from the DMV area, and basically asked him, like, hey, you good with coming home? And then he ultimately gets drafted, and now he's a part of the Wizards organization. Can you tell us a little bit about some of that conversation and what it means for him, and then what kind of player the Wizards fans can expect from Bob Carrington?
Yes, I was not a fly on the wall in the conversation, but having spoken to both Will Dawkins and Bob Carrington, that was a major topic of the conversation. A lot of young people who get drafted into any of these leagues, the four major leagues here in North America, they don't necessarily want to go home. You know, in some cases, they're dying to do so, and Bob Carrington is more than happy to do so because it allows his family to come to all his games, and he can just go up the road for dinner and, you know, hypothetically. Yeah. He's good with it, and he's got the maturity to deal with it. Some people don't have the maturity to play at home. Some people don't have the maturity to play far from home. He, by all accounts, is a very mature, very driven young person, which is important to note considering that he's only 19 years old. And he was only a one-and-done prospect. He's got promise on both ends of the floor. He's projects as a combo guard right now. And if he can become a full-time NBA-level starter at point guard, that would be a tremendous get for Washington with that 14th pick.
Well, and I saw, I mean, this is a guy that burst onto the scene his first game. He records a triple-double, and this is a guy that maybe wasn't thought of necessarily as a point guard coming to Pittsburgh, and, you know, he has that sort of a skill set. So I think that's going to be intriguing. Can you give us a little bit of insight into Keyshawn George? I think that's the difficult part with the NBA draft for a lot of people nowadays, is at least these guys are college players versus an Alex Sarr. But I think even looking at some of these guys, I watch a lot of ACC basketball. My mom's a Duke fan, so I watch a lot of Duke. I know that's not going to be exceptionally popular, but okay. I didn't, you know, notice a ton about these guys either, but, you know, Keyshawn George, a solid shooter from the outside. Can you give us a little bit of an update on what Keyshawn George is going to give the Wiz?
A 6'7" wing who is said to have a really good feel for the game. He certainly can shoot from three. He's said not to be very athletic in the, you know, for a regular person, he's athletic. For an NBA level player, not all that athletic, particularly for a wing. One of the people he's been compared to is Kyle Slow-Mo Anderson, who plays at a very controlled pace. Now, I'm not sure that Keyshawn George is going to play at a slow pace, but he's not going to be jumping out of the gym. But at 6'7", with a slightly unconventional but accurate shooting release, you don't necessarily have to light up the vertical jump in order to get your three-point shot off cleanly. He's got other areas where he's got to grow, particularly his defense, because of that athleticism. And one of the concerns about him is that he's never been a huge point producer. Is that the function of the teams he played for? Is that the function of the systems in which he played? Well, we and the Wizards are going to find out. And maybe he becomes a 3-and-D wing. Maybe he becomes a sharp-shooting three-point guy who can handle the basketball. Certainly an upside play for whom some of the draft analysts are not very optimistic.
Interesting, because it's one of those things that it feels like, you know, last year we saw it beginning with Koulibaly, obviously Alex Saar, even a Bub Carrington, that they've gone for high upside guys, whereas maybe not the same for George here. It's interesting, though. I think that, you know, this draft philosophy and this draft in particular was going to be interesting to see how they attacked it. Let's move on to some of the free agency moves. Wizards haven't been too active, but Jonas Valanciunas was the big move that they've made so far. 3 years, $30 million. I think in terms of contract value, that's a nice value. What is he going to provide on the floor? You know, they've lacked size for a long time, and then they move Gafford on to Dallas, so they're kind of lacking size inside, but Valanciunas can provide a little bit of that.
Yes, he can sure rebound. He's an elite level rebounder, and defensive rebounding was Washington's worst aspect to their game last year. Worst defensive rebounding team in the league, despite the improvements after Brian Keefe became the interim coach. So at the bare minimum, he's going to improve that area of the floor. And because he'll be able to start games, and I assume that he'll start games, he protects Alex Saar from having to go against these very rugged, very bruising counterparts, or at least some of those guys who remain in the league. So he's not going to have to necessarily outmuscle Bam Adebayo, for instance, or Steven Adams, at least not to start with. Now, 3-4 years down the road, yes. Now, at 7 feet tall and 225 pounds, no. So, and in terms of what else he brings, well, I saw that Kevin Pelton, whose work I really respect, noted he's a great screen setter. He's an efficient post-up guy. So they added a solid, high-level, competent center, not a star center by any stretch, and certainly closer to the end of his career than its start, but someone who's going to be an adult in the locker room and help mentor these young guys, particularly Alex Saar.
So let's just move on to the rest of the offseason now, because, you know, I think it's interesting. We like I talked about earlier, if there was going to be a trade, I don't think anyone expected it to be Denny Avdija. I think the name people expected to be on the move was Kyle Kuzma, and we haven't seen that come to fruition yet. Is that something that maybe still comes down the line here, or is it maybe looking like Kuz is going to be on the Wiz this season?
Looks like he will be on the team to begin the season. I think that's very highly likely. That's the plan. And I think this shows, the move that was made shows, again, that Denny probably had the second highest trade value of any existing player on the team, trailing only Bilal, even greater than Kuz, partly because of the age and partly because Kuzma is a rather polarizing player in NBA circles. And the Wizards genuinely value him. That is, they're being sincere when they say that. And he's someone they can go to one out of every 4 or 5 possessions and just basically say, Kyle, generate a shot. And that takes pressure off a lot of the young guys. And there is some value to that, for sure.
Well, and going into next season, just a couple more for you, talking with Josh Robbins from The Athletic. Going into next season, How much improvement can we expect? I know that there haven't been tons and tons of moves, but now you have at least another year under Brian Keefe. It seemed like the team improved, maybe not tons in the win-loss column, but they did improve defensively in a lot of ways under Brian Keefe. Now he's full-time head coach. They're going to have a full offseason to work with him. Jordan Poole looked like he got some stuff going at the end of the season. How much improvement can we expect? I mean, this was one of the worst teams in the NBA last year, so it's not as if it can get much worse, but how much improvement can we expect from them this season?
Well, they're going to be better to a degree. They're still going to be one of the worst teams in the league. I don't think that there's any question about that. The problem is, and I do think it's a problem, now they wouldn't say the same thing, but I disagree with them, that there's a danger that they finish with the second or third worst record in the league as opposed to the worst record in the league. And I sound like Debbie Downer to say it, but there is real value, particularly in the upcoming draft where they're scheduled to be five upper level prospects, to finishing with the league's worst record. Because if you finish with the league's worst record, you're guaranteed of drafting no worse than fifth. Now, let's say they finish with the second or third worst record. Well, they're probably going to be a top five team, but they can't guarantee it. And I think that's a problem. On the other hand, and I have covered a team like this that didn't develop its youngsters properly, there is a danger to just being god-awful terrible. Now, that's destructive to the development of a guy like Alex Saar, Bub Carrington, Keyshawn George, or Bilal. But at the same time, I think it goes back to what I said before, that the key player and players on this team going forward have either just finished high school and will be available in next year's draft or in the 2026 draft. So I think they best be careful not to be much better than a team that's going to be just atrocious, and that's going to be the Brooklyn Nets.
Interesting. And you mentioned a team, this will be the last one for you, talking with Josh Robbins from The Athletic. You mentioned covering a team where it just seemed like they got in a cycle of being bad. They're not developing their young players. And the Wizards, you know, if they're not careful, could end up in that cycle. What's the way to avoid that? Is there, you know, you mentioned you want to be bad, so you may be the worst record in the league next year, so you can guarantee that you're getting one of these guys, but you also don't want to have a culture of losing. What's the balance there?
That's the needle they've got to thread. And it's a tough one. It's a very difficult one. The balance is you've got to have veterans on the court who are better than just competent. You know, they can't just be 35-year-old guys who are on their last legs and yet provide good examples. Now, those types of guys are nice, but you need more than that. You need veterans who can actually comport themselves better than average, are great in the locker room, be examples to young guys, but as I said, better than average on the court, at least, to help those young guys function. Kuzma does that. Malcolm Brogdon will do that. Valanciunas will do that. But as I said, the real key to this team's future are the next two drafts. And hopefully, from their perspective, I'm wrong, and Alex Saar can become a franchise-level player, or Carrington. But more likely than not, the key to this team's future will either be in the 25 or 26 draft, or both. Preferably both.
Preferably both. Josh, appreciate the time. Enjoy the rest of your fourth.
Hey, happy birthday to our country.
Yes, sir. You heard from Josh Robbins of The Athletic. He joined us on the BetQL guest hotline. Sports betting has come to Maryland. Don't place that first bet without checking with BetQL. BetQL analyzes every game to find you the most profitable betting opportunities. Get 3 free days of BetQL access by downloading the BetQL app or visiting BetQL.com. We'll continue talking Wizards here on the 4th of July on Overtime on the Fan. Appreciate Josh Robbins for joining us. Appreciate you guys hanging out on the 4th of July. Toby Altizer with you till 9 o'clock. Feel free to hop in if you'd like, 800-636-1067. You can also tweet at me at Toby_Altizer. Let's talk a little more Wizards. So something interesting coming off of that conversation with Josh is at the end of the conversation, the balance here now for the Wizards, because it sounds like Josh doesn't feel like, even though the Wizards took three first-round guys this past draft just a couple of days ago, you take Alex Saar, you take Bob Carrington, you take Keyshawn George, it doesn't sound like Josh is thinking any of those guys are going to develop into superstars. He thinks they're going to be more so, maybe they're good players, but maybe not superstars. And I guess I'd be interested now to ask him about Coulibaly. Maybe next time I talk to him, I'll have to ask him if he thinks he can be a superstar. Because one thing that we went through following the finals was kind of the recipe. When you look at the Mavericks, you look at the Celtics, what's kind of the recipe to building a championship contender in the NBA? And one of the main things, really the main thing, is you have to have two star players. Not just good players, but star players. You know, if you look in recent history at the teams that have won, they've had two, generally three All-NBA superstar-type players, and that's what both teams had in the finals this year. Obviously, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum for the Celtics, and you had Luka and Kyrie for the Mavericks. You know, you can keep going down some of these lists. You look at the Nuggets last year, and they had Jokic and Jamal Murray. If you want to say maybe with the Heat, they didn't. You know, I think Eric Spoelstra is a fantastic coach and gets the most out of his guys, and so maybe they only had one, but they also didn't win it all, right? Like, they came up short. And so if he doesn't feel like they're going to get a superstar out of this draft class with Saar, Carrington, and George, then it's kind of imperative that they're picking up high again next year, which, you know, it's going to happen. They're not going to be very good, even if they improve off of this past season. It's not as if they're going to go from, you know, how many wins do they have this past year? 18? It's not as if they're going to go from 18 wins this past season to 35 or something. Like, they're not going to make a huge jump. But, 15 wins, sorry, I overestimated them. 15 wins this past season. So maybe going to 18 wins would be a big enough improvement. Maybe that's the improvement. But regardless, when you look at the Wizards, like, they're not going to take a huge step forward, but you have to find that balance, like we're talking about the end there. What's the balance between trying to tank without actually tanking, right? Like, they're going to still have solid players. It sounds like, you know, Josh basically said that Kuzma is going to be on the team. Jordan Poole, I don't think he's going anywhere. So you're going to have Kuzma and Jordan Poole. If you were truly trying to go all in on the tank, then probably one or both of those guys would have been moved. Just for anything. I think you, obviously, some of it's like there's a salary floor in the NBA. So, that, you know, there's different things. You don't want to overpay a dude just because. I get all those things. But they're still not going to be very good. But you have to be able to balance being bad to get these draft picks. You know, they were bad last year. They got a top pick in a draft that wasn't viewed as very good. And, you know, who knows what Saar can be, but, you know, when you're getting compared to a Rudy Gobert, which, look, Rudy Gobert is a heck of a defender. He's a really good player. He doesn't give you much offensively. You don't really want that drafted second overall. Not to say that he's a bad player, but when you're drafting second overall, you want a difference maker, a franchise changer. Rudy Gobert's not that guy. And you look at Bob Carrington. I don't know that he's that guy. Maybe he's someone that can be a nice combo guard that either comes off the bench to give you some scoring or, you know, he works alongside Jordan Poole in the starting lineup eventually. Who knows? But it's not as if they're going to get, you know, a star player out of this draft. Maybe Saar can reach a ceiling of that sort. Maybe Coulibaly can be that. But chances are, Coulibaly maybe. But Saar, I just don't know. I really like him. I think it was a smart pick. I think he had the highest upside of any of the players in the draft. I just don't know that he is going to be a superstar. And so if you're going to acquire a superstar, next year is maybe the time to do it. You know, when you look at the 2025 class, you look at the top of the class and you've got Cooper Flagg, and everybody's in on Cooper Flagg and thinks he's going to be fantastic. Well, maybe that's your superstar. There's some other guys to take a look at. And I'm not as familiar with all these guys, so I'm not even going to go through it. I just know Cooper Flagg. But, you know, Josh basically said five guys that you're looking at. So you want to make sure you're in the top five and get one of those dudes. But the fine balance here is, how do you go from being a team that struggles and isn't very good to make sure you get these picks to when it's now time and you get some guys and it's now time to turn around? How do you get things turned around that you actually start winning? And it seems like they've got good people in charge of the front office now with Michael Winger and Will Dawkins and Travis Schlenk. Like, it seems like they've got some things kind of going their way. But at the same point, when it comes time to start winning basketball games, are they going to be able to do it? Because you look at the Detroit Pistons. I think they're a good example. Cade Cunningham's a solid player. Jaden Ivey hasn't maybe reached what they expected of him. But you can go through like the Pistons, and they've had top picks for year after year after year after year, and look where they're at. They haven't won anything. And so they can't seem to turn things around when they need to. You don't want the Wizards to get stuck in that. You know, the goal isn't to always have the top pick and continually be rebuilding. It might be nice to have some top picks, but if you get a top pick and then you can't get things going in the right direction, what does it do you? Look at the Hornets. They get a really good player in a LaMelo Ball and feels like they should be able to start turning things around. Where have they been? Same spot. They just don't have winning players. And this is where it's interesting to me, because I felt like Minnesota was getting stuck in this for a little bit. You know, they had a Karl-Anthony Towns, and to me, Karl-Anthony Towns, he's a very skilled player. He's got so much talent, but to me, for the longest time, he just wasn't a winning basketball player. He's really good to have on your team. When you have him, he's going to be one of the best players on your team. He's going to be able to score. He's going to be able to rebound, an incredible shooter for his size and all those things. He's a good basketball player, but he just wasn't a winner. He just wasn't. Whether it was the lack of effort at times, whether it was, you know, not coming up big in big situations. But what did it take to turn things around? Yes, they had to make a Gobert move. They made a Gobert move that was mocked by a lot of people. But look, Gobert has helped kind of reshape what they're doing defensively. But they got a dog in Anthony Edwards. They got a guy that is a true superstar that can turn a game on its head and take it over. And in turn, he's turned Cat into a little bit more of a killer. I still am not a huge Cat fan. I don't think he's the most winning basketball player. And, you know, you kind of understand what I'm saying if you've watched some of these things. He's not that he's a bad player, but you got to make winning basketball plays. And they ran into some bad spots. So they played really well in the playoffs for the most part. But it took getting an Anthony Edwards. And yes, he's a first overall pick and all those things. And even then, he wasn't like a consensus number one overall pick. So maybe the Wizards can get one of those sorts of guys next year that maybe is a consensus. But they got a guy in Anthony Edwards. And even though Cat was kind of already a star, he kind of brought him along. I don't know if the Wizards have that guy yet. Do they have that guy? And it can't be like a Kuzma, because his future is kind of uncertain. They do value Kuz. I think they do. I think they value him more than the rest of the league, and that's fine. So that's why you just hold on to him in that case. And I think, you know, even more so just as a guy that can lead the franchise a little bit off the floor as well, even though he can be a little bit polarizing, a bit wacky at times. Like, I think they enjoy his leadership in the locker room. It can't be like a Jordan Poole, because, again, uncertain future. You kind of need someone that's a building block guy, whether it's a Koulibaly, maybe Alex Sarr steps into that, maybe Bob Carrington, George. You know, maybe you thought it was going to be Denny Avdija or someone of that nature. But they need someone to step up. So they need a star, but they also need someone that's just going to motivate these guys and be that voice in the locker room that everyone respects. And when they talk, everyone listens. Like, it feels to me like with Minnesota, it took a little while, but Anthony Edwards has become that guy. They need a star, though. And that's the main thing. Like, you can have a dude that motivates the group, but if you don't have a star, it doesn't really matter. And so they've got to find a way to do it. And that's the toughest part in the NBA, is finding a star and being able to acquire one. And you got to either do it through a trade or, you know, big time in free agency or get lucky in the draft. And frankly, that's what it is. Get lucky in the draft and hope your development can turn these guys into it. Because look, I think Sarr could be a superstar. I think that's his potential. But they're going to have to get him there. You know, he's got such a unique skill set. Now, it's a unique skill set in terms of a 7-footer that can move like he does. But more people in the NBA are doing that than ever. You got dudes that can move like Sarr. He's not one of one. It used to be like when Durant walked into the league, Durant was kind of one of one at that size to be able to move. There's at least a couple of guys. Not to say it's common, but to find a 6'11 guy that plays on the wing and can move around and dribble like a guard a little bit, like you're maybe going to expect out of Sarr, people can do that. So it's not as if he's going to be a complete unicorn, but you're going to have to be able to develop him. I think defensively, he's such a unique player in that a lot of times those sorts of guys, they just don't have the agility or the foot speed to keep up with guards on the perimeter when they're playing on-ball defense. And Sarr can. If you watch some of his defensive highlights, he actually looks really good on the ball against wing players, which is a unique trait to have. But he struggles a little bit defensively when he's having to play a little off ball, when he's put in those pick and roll situations where he's guarding the big. So there's going to be some work for him to do. I think defensively, it's going to be pretty easy to see that he's going to have a really good ceiling. And that's why you get the Jaren Jackson Jr. comp that Josh threw out there. That's why you get the Rudy Gobert comp. Defensively, I think it's going to be pretty easy to see that he's going to reach that ceiling at some point and be a really, really good defender. The issue is, and it's similar to Koulibaly here, both of those guys might have high defensive ceilings, but if you don't provide much offense, you can't be a star. You just can't be. And so they're going to have to find a way to develop both of these guys into being good offensive players. And maybe they're not going to be the stars, but can you find a way to develop these guys into being core role players? Can you turn them into solid players where you can depend on them? And I don't quite know. Like, honestly, I it's not like I watched Sarr play over in Australia, but I at least feel like I'm somewhat familiar just because he's been the name all year long. I got to be honest, I didn't watch much Carrington. I don't know a whole lot about Keyshawn George, so that's going to be something we'll learn as the year goes on. But I'm intrigued by both of their skill sets. George, it's intriguing to me in that he's maybe not the most athletic like Josh laid out, but he's a shooter from the outside, a wing. I'm intrigued by his skill set. But Carrington, maybe he's someone that can kind of work alongside Jordan Poole, whether it's kind of counteracting him when Poole goes to the bench and Carrington comes in, a combo guard, long wingspan, can score the ball. I'm intrigued by his skill set and whether you can turn him into something. Because the other thing about the modern NBA, it seems like the NBA for a little while, just a couple of years ago even, was run by guards. You think of Steph Curry, you think of Klay Thompson, you think of those sorts of guys. And there were, certain different players that had a big impact. But for the most part, it was like if you had a guard like that, then you were going to win. It feels like now the NBA has shifted to, it's all about the wing players. You think of the Tatums, you think of the Jaylen Browns, a Luka fits into that kind of mold to me, and those sorts of players. Even an Ant, I guess, would still be considered a guard, but he's kind of taller, almost fits into that sort of wing role. So I'm intrigued with the skill set of some of these guys. Carrington's definitely a guard, but Sarr maybe almost fits in as a big wing as opposed to a true five at the center position, even though you think 7-footer, you think center. So I think they have some intriguing pieces, but the hard part that you have to toe if you're the Wizards is, yeah, you want Cooper Flagg. Yeah, you want to get these guys, but you also don't want to establish the culture like you've seen in Detroit, essentially. And I know out here, culture, that buzzword, people just immediately think, oh, Ron. But it truly, like, if you just continually lose, even though it's not necessarily on purpose, like, guys don't learn how to play winning basketball in the NBA. And so when it's time to flip the switch, where now it feels like you've got a solid five and you can keep going and building and you start going the right direction, they're going to have to find someone that can push them along. And hopefully that's someone, whether it's this draft, next draft, or even two drafts from now, they're definitely looking into the future, which I think is a good thing. I think it's about time that the Wizards had someone that is being honest about what the roster is and looking and saying, all right, this is how it has to be built. So that is nice, but there's going to be a balance there of building by losing, building up the talent and building up the infrastructure of the roster, but also making sure that they don't get in bad habits of playing losing basketball, which you've seen in other Eastern Conference teams like the Detroit Pistons, like the Charlotte Hornets. Charlotte's had some talent on their team. They just play no defense. It's a losing formula in the NBA. Detroit's had some talent on their team, and they just can't win basketball games. So there's going to have to be that mix there for the Wizards. How do they do it? So Will Dawkins and Michael Winger are going to have to figure out. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue talking about the NBA, but I want to talk about the polarizing topic that's really swept the sports world since the NBA draft. Let's talk a little Bronny James. We'll talk about it next here on the 4th of July on 106.7 The Fan. It's the 4th of July. Hopefully you're enjoying your time with some family, enjoying your day off. Toby Altizer alongside my guy Max, hopefully providing you some entertainment on this beautiful 4th of July. Weather's a little hot, but the Nationals got a 1-0 win, so that's always nice. We're talking about the NBA right now. The most polarizing topic ever since the draft, we kind of knew it was going to happen. Bronny James goes to LA. And so I think we need to take a look here. One thing I cannot stand, Max, is, and this happens with everything, it's something that drives me nuts. It doesn't matter what aspect of life you want to take it, whether it's sports or not. I don't like that we can't just acknowledge that a lot of life is lived somewhere in the middle. Everything has to be one side or the other. Like, a lot of life is lived in the middle.
There is so much of life that lives in the middle. I've learned,
or at least somewhere in the middle.
The more and more my life has gotten off the internet, the more and more I have realized this. But
So the reason I bring this up is because we've seen both sides of this. And I think both sides have some correct points to their argument. But the idea that, like, you know, you have some people saying, like, oh, well, now you complain about nepotism? Well, when did I say nepotism was good? Like, when did I say it was fine? Like, but, and Denton, I was listening to him driving in earlier today. He was in on the Junks. He brought up a good point. Like, nepotism is only a negative connotation when the guy sucks.
It's true.
Right? Like, I know a lot of people don't like Joe Buck, but Joe Buck is solid. Yeah, there's some nepotism there, but Joe Buck is solid. Mm-hmm. No one complains about Kyle Shanahan being a Shanahan.
That's right.
Like, it's only when you're bad at your job and certain things. But can we at least acknowledge on one front that, like, I don't know if Bronny James gets drafted or not, if he doesn't go to the Lakers. But can we at least acknowledge that, like, LeBron being there and some of the extra craziness, like Rich Paul coming out with a report through Bob Meyer saying, like, he's calling teams saying if they draft him, he's just going to go play in Australia, whatever. Heck, if I were the Celtics, by the way, they had the possibility to do the funniest thing.
Call your bluff.
At the 54th pick, I would have just taken him.
Call your bluff.
Go play. And honestly, right now, like, I know LeBron signed a big contract. If I were the Lakers, I'd play hardball now, too, with LeBron. I just drafted your son.
Got your boy.
You're going to play here. But regardless, like, can we not act like LeBron drafted him?
Like, Led GM in full effect.
I know it's not like, I want to try and argue here in facts, like, and just have a logical discussion here in facts. I know LeBron's not the general manager.
But like.
But he is.
But like.
But like, he's in charge of the team. But like, come on. Like, J.J. Redick.
Like, come on. His podcast host? Really?
Like, LeBron's in charge. And
that was
so,
a coincidence, look, you think?
So, I think that LeBron had a big part in drafting his son. Okay?
Without,
can we at least
doubt,
acknowledge that?
Without,
on the other side, I don't think he's a completely incompetent basketball player. Like, I don't think, I don't know that he's going to be great. Would he have been better if he stayed another year in college? Absolutely. If it were anyone else, should he have probably stayed another year in college? Absolutely. But at the same point, like, I don't think he's going to be the worst basketball. I could see him playing at least on an NBA team. Also, by the way, I come from a city where they have a dude on their basketball team who is one of the worst players in the NBA, and he's only there because he's there with his brother, and that would be Thanasis Antetokounmpo with Giannis Antetokounmpo. So believe me, when they say there are 15 spots on the roster for an NBA team, that 15th spot can be for the most garbage player, and they'll live with it. So Bronny James, even if he's the 15th player, whatever. You don't even have to be that good if you're just appeasing your superstar. Whatever. Also, still, nepotism. But my point is, like, he's the 55th overall pick. Let's be real about the 55th overall pick. You're not getting good players. You're throwing darts. So if you want to do your star player a favor by drafting his son with the 55th overall pick, you have every right to do that. And there's really, to me, Nothing wrong with it. Who are you missing out on? You name me one dude drafted. Let's look it up right now. Who was drafted 56th after that? Let's look up the 2020. I think there were only three more picks after that. Let's look up the draft and see if you know any of these dudes. Because, frankly, when you get to that point, you don't know them. You just don't. And so, yeah, it's you can make whatever. Let's just be real. It does not matter. Like, the 55th pick, it's not that big of a deal. So, after Bronny, Kevin McCullough Jr. Okay, I actually know him, so that kind of screws up my point right here. But 57th, Ulrich Kromke. The Mavericks drafted 58th, Ariel Hukporti. I don't know. Like, I might take Bronny James over those guys. So can we at least acknowledge that he's like a basketball player? Like, can we at least acknowledge that? Because some people are like, oh, he wouldn't even be. He probably plays somewhere. Maybe he skips a few steps along the way, but he's probably playing.
And the thing about like the way NBA drafts go, like a lot of GMs, like, sure, they don't scout just stats. They scout traits too.
Yeah. And I also don't like, on the flip side of this, he wasn't a projected. He might have been projected top 10 before the season. Let's be real. He wasn't a top 10 talent.
No, with the heart thing, that makes it even more scary.
Well, and even before the heart thing, to me, he wasn't a top 10 talent.
Yeah.
Maybe he's a fringe first rounder. I still don't even feel like that, but I don't know that he was anything special, especially for his size, which, you know, unfortunately for him, he didn't get all of LeBron's size. He's 6'1". So
Bryce did.
Yeah, he did. He did. And he might be better than Bronny.
That's what streets are saying.
But the other thing about this, and hopefully we can get past it so that we can acknowledge this. This is such a cool story for the NBA. It's a cool story for LeBron. It's a cool story for Bronny, regardless of how you feel about him, regardless how you feel about LeBron, regardless how you feel about the NBA. This is pretty cool. Like, you think about the stuff when, you know, Ken Griffey Jr. was playing with his dad and they hit back-to-back home runs. Like, that stuff is cool. It's really cool. And so for the first pair of father-son to be playing in the NBA together, we'll see when they actually suit up for each other, because it sounds like Bronny's going to play in the G League. But that's cool. Like, it's a cool story. So this is, to me, where it's the issue. Like, regardless of how you feel, it's a cool story. He's at least a NBA caliber-ish player, right? He's not some dude that wouldn't even be playing basketball anywhere. Like, be real. He's got some talent. On the flip side, don't try to tell me that, like, LeBron didn't draft this kid. Like, so I think both things can be true, but ultimately what I hope comes out of this, we kind of all understood this was going to happen, so you can get mad if you want. We kind of all understood it was going to happen. To me, though, the big thing here, it's just a cool story. It really is. It's a cool story. I mean, think about, you know, who LeBron is, and look, LeBron can be annoying with some of the stuff, and sometimes watching him on the court, whatever, however you feel about LeBron. But LeBron has been a great ambassador for the league, and how he conducts himself off the court, whether you agree with his politics or not, well, it doesn't matter. You don't hear scandals with LeBron. You don't hear him in the news because he's speeding through the streets of L.A. You don't hear him getting in trouble because he's doing something illegal. No, you don't. If the worst thing that LeBron does is he drafts his son to play with him for the Lakers, you can take that, right? So it's a cool story. It really is. He's an all-time great, in my opinion. I'd rank him number two. I'd have Jordan one still, and LeBron's probably number two. And so you got one of the top even if you don't want to have him at number two, you want to argue, whatever. He's a top five basketball player of all time, and his son's going to get to play with him. It's a cool story. It's just a cool story. Regardless of all the circumstances and all this stuff, acknowledge the fact that Bronny is a legit basketball player, even though he's probably not going to be a superstar like his dad. He's a basketball player. Maybe he's never anything more than a rotational guy that's at the end of the bench, but he's a basketball player that could make it in the NBA, and he's going to get to play with his dad. It's a cool story. It's a cool story. I don't know that it needs to be anything more than that. It also just shows that the Lakers are a bit of a joke, which I also enjoy. Let's take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about the 4th of July. What is on your ideal plate? You can give us a call, honestly, if you want to talk about this as well. 800-636-1067 on the MGM National Harbor Listener Lines. What's on your ideal plate? And what's on your ideal burger and hot dog? How are you fixing things up today? I'm sure you've already had some. I had a burger today. I don't know if you've had one yet today, Max. Maybe we got to figure out a way to get you a burger and dog.
Soon.
Soon. All right. So we'll figure out a way to get him a burger and dog. But how are you fixing things up? Let's talk a little food on the 4th of July here on The Fan. It's the 4th of July. Hopefully you're enjoying your time with some family, enjoying your day off. Toby Altizer alongside my guy Max. Hopefully providing you some entertainment on this beautiful 4th of July. Weather's a little hot, but the Nationals got a 1-0 win, so that's always nice. We're talking about the NBA right now. The most polarizing topic ever since the draft, we kind of knew it was going to happen. Bronny James goes to LA. And so I think we need to take a look here. One thing I cannot stand, Max, is, and this happens with everything, it's something that drives me nuts. It doesn't matter what aspect of life you want to take it, whether it's sports or not. I don't like that we can't just acknowledge that a lot of life is lived somewhere in the middle. Everything has to be one side or the other. Like, a lot of life is lived in the middle.
There is so much of life that lives in the middle. I've learned,
or at least somewhere in the middle.
The more and more my life has gotten off the internet, the more and more I have realized this. But
So the reason I bring this up is because we've seen both sides of this. And I think both sides have some correct points to their argument. But the idea that, like, you know, you have some people saying, like, oh, well, now you complain about nepotism? Well, when did I say nepotism was good? Like, when did I say it was fine? Like, but, and Denton, I was listening to him driving in earlier today. He was in on the junks. He brought up a good point. Like, nepotism is only a negative connotation when the guy sucks.
It's true.
Right? Like, I know a lot of people don't like Joe Buck, but Joe Buck is solid. Yeah, there's some nepotism there, but Joe Buck is solid. Mm-hmm. No one complains about Kyle Shanahan being a Shanahan.
That's right.
Like, it's only when you're bad at your job and certain things. But can we at least acknowledge on one front that, like, I don't know if Bronny James gets drafted or not, if he doesn't go to the Lakers. But can we at least acknowledge that, like, LeBron being there and some of the extra craziness, like Rich Paul coming out with a report through Bob Myers saying, like, he's calling teams saying if they draft him, he's just going to go play in Australia, whatever. Heck, if I were the Celtics, by the way, they had the possibility to do the funniest thing.
Call your bluff.
At the 54th pick, I would have just taken him.
And call, like, your bluff.
Go play. And honestly, right now, like, I know LeBron signed a big contract. If I were the Lakers, I'd play hardball now, too, with LeBron. I just drafted your son.
Got your boy.
You're going to play here. But regardless, like, can we not act like LeBron drafted him?
Like, Led GM in full effect.
I know it's not, like, I want to try and argue here in facts, like, and just have a logical discussion here in facts. I know LeBron's not the general manager.
But, like.
But he is.
But, like.
But, like, he's in charge of the team. But, like, come on. Like, J.J. Redick.
Like, come on. His podcast host? Really?
Like, LeBron's in charge. And
that was a coincidence, you think?
So, I think that LeBron had a big part in drafting his son. Okay?
Can we at least acknowledge that?
On the other side, I don't think he's a completely incompetent basketball player. Like, I don't know that he's going to be great. Would he have been better if he stayed another year in college? Absolutely. If it were anyone else, should he have probably stayed another year in college? Absolutely. But at the same point, like, I don't think he's going to be the worst basketball. I could see him playing at least on an NBA team. Also, by the way, I come from a city where they have a dude on their basketball team who is one of the worst players in the NBA, and he's only there because he's there with his brother, and that would be Thanasis Antetokounmpo with Giannis Antetokounmpo. So believe me, when they say there are 15 spots on the roster for an NBA team, that 15th spot can be for the most garbage player, and they'll live with it. So Bronny James, even if he's the 15th player, whatever. You don't even have to be that good if you're just appeasing your superstar. Whatever. Also, still, nepotism. But my point is, like, he's the 55th overall pick. Let's be real about the 55th overall pick. You're not getting good players. You're throwing darts. So if you want to do your star player a favor, By drafting his son with the 55th overall pick, you have every right to do that. And there's really, to me, nothing wrong with it. Who are you missing out on? You name me one dude drafted. Let's look it up right now. Who was drafted 56th after that? Let's look up the 2020. I think there were only three more picks after that. Let's look up the draft and see if you know any of these dudes. Because, frankly, when you get to that point, you don't know them. You just don't. And so, yeah, it's you can make whatever. Let's just be real. It does not matter. Like, the 55th pick, it's not that big of a deal. So, after Bronny, Kevin McCullough Jr. Okay, I actually know him, so that kind of screws up my point right here. But 57th, Ulrich Kromke. The Mavericks drafted 58th, Ariel Hukporti. I don't know. Like, I might take Bronny James over those guys. So, can we at least acknowledge that he's, like, a basketball player? Like, can we at least acknowledge that? Because some people are like, oh, he wouldn't even be. He probably plays somewhere. Maybe he skips a few steps along the way, but he's probably playing.
And the thing about, like, the way NBA drafts go, like, a lot of GMs, like, sure, they don't scout just stats. They scout traits, too.
Yeah, and I also don't like, on the flip side of this, he wasn't a projected. He might have been projected top 10 before the season. Let's be real. He wasn't a top 10 talent.
No, with the heart thing, that makes it even more scary.
Well, and even before the heart thing, to me, he wasn't a top 10 talent.
Yeah.
Maybe he's a fringe first rounder. I still don't even feel like that, but I don't know that he was anything special, especially for his size, which, you know, unfortunately for him, he didn't get all of LeBron's size. He's 6'1". So
Bryce did.
Yeah, he did. He did. And he might be better than Bronny.
That's what streets are saying.
But the other thing about this, and hopefully we can get past it so that we can acknowledge this. This is such a cool story for the NBA. It's a cool story for LeBron. It's a cool story for Bronny, regardless of how you feel about him, regardless how you feel about LeBron, regardless how you feel about the NBA. This is pretty cool. Like, you think about the stuff when, you know, Ken Griffey Jr. was playing with his dad and they hit back-to-back home runs. Like, that stuff is cool. It's really cool. And so for the first pair of father-son to be playing in the NBA together, we'll see when they actually suit up for each other, because it sounds like Bronny's going to play in the G League. But that's cool. Like, it's a cool story. So this is, to me, where it's the issue. Like, regardless of how you feel, it's a cool story. He's at least a NBA caliber-ish player, right? He's not some dude that wouldn't even be playing basketball anywhere. Like, be real. He's got some talent. On the flip side, don't try to tell me that, like, LeBron didn't draft this kid. Like, so I think both things can be true, but ultimately what I hope comes out of this, we kind of all understood this was going to happen, so you can get mad if you want. We kind of all understood it was going to happen. To me, though, the big thing here, it's just a cool story. It really is. It's a cool story. I mean, think about, you know, who LeBron is, and look, LeBron can be annoying with some of the stuff, and sometimes watching him on the court, whatever, however you feel about LeBron. But LeBron has been a great ambassador for the league, and how he conducts himself off the court, whether you agree with his politics or not, well, it doesn't matter. You don't hear scandals with LeBron. You don't hear him in the news because he's speeding through the streets of L.A. You don't hear him getting in trouble because he's doing something illegal. No, you don't. If the worst thing that LeBron does is he drafts his son to play with him for the Lakers, you can take that, right? So it's a cool story. It really is. He's an all-time great, in my opinion. I'd rank him number two. I have Jordan one still, and LeBron's probably number two. And so you got one of the top five. Even if you don't want to have him at number two, you want to argue whatever. He's a top five basketball player of all time, and his son's going to get to play with him. It's a cool story. It's just a cool story. Regardless of all the circumstances and all this stuff, acknowledge the fact that Bronny is a legit basketball player, even though he's probably not going to be a superstar like his dad. He's a basketball player. Maybe he's never anything more than a rotational guy that's at the end of the bench, but he's a basketball player that could make it in the NBA, and he's going to get to play with his dad. It's a cool story. It's a cool story. I don't know that it needs to be anything more than that. It also just shows that the Lakers are a bit of a joke, which I also enjoy. Let's take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about the 4th of July. What is on your ideal plate? You can give us a call, honestly, if you want to talk about this as well. 800-636-1067 on the MGM National Harbor listener lines. What's on your ideal plate? And what's on your ideal burger and hot dog? How are you fixing things up today? I'm sure you've already had some. I had a burger today. I don't know if you've had one yet today, Max. Maybe we got to figure out a way to get you a burger and dog.
Soon.
All right. So we'll figure out a way to get him a burger and dog. But how are you fixing things up? Let's talk a little food on the 4th of July here on The Fan.